You probably have some interest in what happened in Georgia this week. The fact is, we're very proud of the race that was run there. I was interested in some of the statements of the people from Georgia saying, hey, we reduced by 20 points the advantage had been in that district for the Republicans. This is good news for us, for our legislative races and our congressional races and also statewide.
Marshall Tucker, just one of the great, great Southern rock bands. Listening to the Laura Ingraham Show, Nancy Pelosi is perhaps experiencing something of a soft coup attempt, but will it be successful? And is it really all about Nancy or something else that's intrinsically wrong with the message, the policies or lack thereof, the identity politics that has really infected all aspects of the Democrat Party, the failure to connect with working class Americans. What is it all about? Larry Sabato is one of our old friends from the University of Virginia Center for Politics, where he's the founder and director there, and a political scientist, author, and he joins us now. Larry, great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Laura. How are you doing today?
I'm great. First Friday of the summertime.
Yes.
Cloudy. And
looking forward to July 4th.
Yeah, cloudy and miserable in Washington, but, you know, we're alive and we're free.
Well, come back down to your old haunt here. You should go to Monticello for July 4th. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. I bet it is beautiful. And, you know, I keep hearing about come back to Charlottesville, but I'm waiting for those invitations from the university. I still have.
Well, I'll send you one to Monticello. I was very honored to be their speaker last year, July 4th.
Oh.
They have a different one each year, obviously, so people won't have to listen to me. But
Aww. It's
just a wonderful event because it's all about Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence and swearing in new citizens, and it's inspiring. I can guarantee you. People ought to come down and see it at least once.
Oh my gosh, I have to. You know, my kids. I have not brought all of my kids to Monticello. I only brought my oldest, who's 12, but I got to make that a whole trip for my family. I can't come 4th of July, but I'd love to come down another time.
They're open, I think, every day except for
Christmas,
and maybe New Year's. I don't know, but they're open all the time.
Oh, good, Larry.
It's well worth the trip.
Good, and we're staying with you. Okay, Larry.
Good, you can stay with me. I'm on the lawn in one of these big pavilions. I can only occupy one room. Come on down.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, you say that, and then all of those Jeffersonian antiques that are in there will be keyed by my son, Nick. No, not keyed, but he has a way of destroying history. He's like a mini Taliban. He just he knocks it down. Inadvertent, though. It's not on purpose.
Oh, okay.
Ever. No, well, we are going to come visit you. But Larry, let's talk about where the Democrats are. Then we'll talk about the challenges facing the Republicans. You do get this sense that the people of the country, as a general matter, just want to get on with it. I get the sense from both Democrats and Republicans, they just want to get on with it. People want to be happier in their lives. They want to be more fulfilled. They want Washington to, as extent possible, recede back to their original functions, and they want to see some results. And Nancy Pelosi has actually delivered a lot of results when it comes to fundraising, but with these, I guess, five special elections, she hasn't really delivered any results there, although I guess some of the margins are closer than they were. Four special elections.
Yeah, no, with Nancy Pelosi in mind, and I don't want to be ageist about it, and I'm getting ready to turn 65 myself, but she's 77. She'll be 78 at the time of the elections next year. Mm-hmm. She's been in Congress forever. Of course, in the terms of Congress, she's middle-aged. You know, it's become a nursing home, really, in so many ways, taxpayer-supported nursing home. But it's time to go. People never seem to know when it's time to go. And that's true of tenured academics, too, so let me add that. But nonetheless, it's time to go. You know, it's time to hand over the reins to someone who's younger, projects a different image for the party. But it's not going to happen. It's obvious already they don't have the votes to get rid of her, and she's not going to go willingly.
Well, I think that in the end, all politicians, and I will put Mitch McConnell and all these politicians on the list, Lamar Alexander, I mean, these Thad Cochran. I mean, these are names from the 80s and 90s, early 90s, and they are still here. John McCain. I mean, early 80s. This is they're historic figures at this point. They might as well be statues.
Yes, but you know who they remember? Strom Thurmond. Strom was in the Senate until 100. He retired, and he died 6 months later. Now, maybe he would have died anyway, simply because he was over 100. But in their minds, it means when I give up this intense activity and having 19 aides at my disposal and having all these additional committee staffers, I'm going to have to fend for myself, or you know, maybe my spouse is going to have to take care of me, and I'm not going to last too long. I really think that's part of the calculation. They want to stay vigorous and alive, but you know, they can do it out of the Senate. It's really possible to have a life outside the Senate or the House.
And I also believe that the more these congressmen and senators listen to their constituents instead of listening to their, you know, small gaggle of big donors or the lobbyists, they tend to hear things a little bit more clearly, see things a little bit more clearly. And yet I think when they go home for their August recess, they find that, you know, they're spending all their time fundraising, or they, you know, have a week or so off, but they're just fundraising. It's almost like it's a hamster wheel that just keeps turning. And there's very little time for reflection as to why are we sent here by the American people? Why are we even doing this?
I remember a time when we would have, for a two-year House term, 1 year of governing, really focused on governing. Then the second year would be about the campaign, and sometimes only half of the second year. You get even a year and a half of real governing. Today, dozens of members of Congress have fundraisers between their new election and their swearing in early January. They're already raising money 2 years hence.
No.
I mean, isn't that incredible?
It's ridiculous. I mean, the entire thing is just preposterous. Does Nancy Pelosi stay or go?
I think she's going to stay because she refuses to leave. And she has raised so much money for so many of her caucus members that they're not going to oust her. You've only got maybe a couple dozen votes to oust her.
So she stays. And
probably, unless she retires. I mean, at a certain point, you either retire or you are retired, you know, by the Almighty.
And then you're finally out. But you do have the octogenarian set seem to be quite frisky. I mean, they seem to be quite energetic, or at least they appear so on occasion when they're on television. But then there are those moments, like John McCain, God bless him, had that moment the other day at the hearing where I think he actually started asking a question and either fell asleep or just lost his caboose of thought. And then people start wondering, oh, wait, maybe it is time to go. Preposterous.
When the TV lights turn on, Laura, they come back to life. They're very different when the TV lights are on. But when they're off, they're, you know, kind of the way you've just described.
Yeah. Let's talk about where the Republicans stand. We just had a guest on who's kind of an expert in healthcare and top cardiologist in the East Coast. And he said that this bill will not, the Senate version does not bring down the price of healthcare, which is the real problem in our society, is the escalating cost of healthcare. And the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies' stocks went up yesterday for a reason, because they don't really take a haircut in this legislation. So that's a long-winded way of asking, does any agreement on health care end up helping the Republicans, do you think, next year in the midterms?
Well, it may not help them in the midterms, because by then, potentially, some of the voters who even voted for Trump will recognize that the bill doesn't really help them. On the other hand, this victory in the Georgia 6 race has probably assisted McConnell in getting the 50 votes he needs. I mean, it's going to be close, and they're going to beg for to be one of the two senators that doesn't have to vote for it. But it helps because they won. The Republicans won under difficult circumstances, with Democrats spending 30 plus million in a single House race. They can't do that in 2018. So I think a lot of Republicans feel better about their electoral chances, and therefore they're more likely to give a vote to the leadership.
Well, I think that's right. And I think in the end, for Donald Trump, if he manages to stay out of tweeting trouble, or if this investigation wraps up, and he's not, I guess he's not, you know, recommended for an impeachment, then I just don't see any great Democrat around the corner for 2020. I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but I bet $10,000 last night for charity that Donald Trump, if he hasn't left office, if he's actually the candidate in 2020, he will win re-election in 2020.
Yeah, it's a decent bet.
I've already bet that.
It's a decent bet. And the truth is that with all these Democrats running, and there are two dozen of them that have at least dipped their toes in the water, the party could easily end up cut to shreds just in the nominating process.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you think about third party candidates. I bet you some pop up. They almost did in 2016. They're not going to be able to stay out of it in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the case. What are you doing this summer? Do you have any fun plans?
We're right here at the Center for Politics trying to do some good things for civic education, expanding our programs in the schools throughout America. We've got 70,000 teachers, high school and middle school teachers, signed up. We provide them with free civic materials. That's our focus, and that's what we're doing.
That's awesome.
I got a free commercial in there, and I appreciate it.
No, no problem. I want anything that we can do to expand the understanding of how important our founding documents are, and the life and knowledge and brilliance of our framers. And they disagreed on a lot, but they managed to come together for the good of the country. How worried, by the way, are you, Larry, about the attempt to erase historical markers and historical markers of significance, given the focus on the P.T. Beauregard and Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee and ripping statues down? And
you're
what
striking
about that?
Close to home.
Yeah.
You're striking close to home, because you know there was an effort here among a relatively small minority of faculty and students to wipe Thomas Jefferson off the story of the University of Virginia. You know, that's kind of difficult since he founded the place. And I'm delighted to say our president here, Terry Sullivan, told them absolutely not, and really infuriated them by quoting Thomas Jefferson on freedom of expression. So you can't change history. Obviously, you condemn, for example, in Jefferson's case, the fact that he was a slave owner. And, Laura, he knew better, and he did it anyway. But you have to put it in the context.
Historical context.
Context. It was the times. He wrote the Declaration of Independence. He wrote the Statute of Virginia for Religious
Liberty. Yep.
The Louisiana Purchase. Think how many Americans wouldn't be Americans without the Louisiana Purchase. And founded, may I add, the Thomas Jefferson, the University of Virginia, which I consider the greatest of those four achievements.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take things in the context of the times and consider someone's entire career. Wouldn't we want that 100 years hence? Not that anybody's going to remember us, but I'm just saying, if you're trying to evaluate somebody, don't you want to evaluate the whole person and the whole career?
I really find it Taliban-esque. I find it so disturbing, because they blow up markers, and they think by blowing them up, hundreds of years old, thousands of years old, that their way will prevail. But markers are important. Historical markers ground a society. And the next thing you know, I mean, they'll be wanting to dig up the war dead, the Confederate war dead, you know, disinter their coffins from Confederate cemeteries across the South and, frankly, across the North. I mean, if they're going to go to the lengths they're going to now in places like University of Texas, Austin, down in, the main square in New Orleans, then everything's fair game. That's why you got to have real people to stand up against that and call it out for what it is. That's a totalitarian response. It's ridiculous.
Why not, instead of tearing down monuments or markers, why not add them to provide balance? You know, have another point of view and another marker or another statue. Well, that would add to the story and would give people a balanced view of what happened. To me, that makes much more sense.
Well, I completely agree. And what a pleasure. It's great to talk to you, as always. Professor Larry Sabato, who's going to be celebrating Independence Day at a really appropriate spot at Monticello. He's at the University of Virginia Center for Politics, and I'm going to take him up on that invitation. Maybe see if I can come speak in the fall, and do me a favor. You know, if you can keep the protesters down to like 1,000, that would be great. I'd appreciate that,
well,
Larry.
We'll do it. All right. We'll do it, Laura.
All right, you take care. Have a great 4th. We'll take a break. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.